The House of Veterans Affairs Division will come to order.
We'll begin with the pledge. And Representative May Quaid, would you lead us?
Thank you. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we have a quorum, and may I have a motion to approve the minutes of the January 30th meeting. Members, do I have a motion?
I so move.
Representative Luck moves approval of the January 30th meeting. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. Now, there was a couple of errors in the minutes of January 23rd meeting. They have been corrected. They're in your packet. May I have a motion to approve the amended minutes for the January 23rd meeting. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair, I would move those minutes.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are approved as amended. Well, I'm sure everybody is fresh, ready to go after yesterday's Super Bowl game. And I have to say, you know, I'm a Patriot fan, but I was pretty depressed after the first half. And I had some friends over, my wife and I had some friends over, and one gentleman was a retired full colonel, and he was a Atlanta fan, and he was really rubbing it into me. But as we got close to the end of the game, things changed in a hurry. But it was a exciting game. I like games like that. Keep them close, and you never know what's going to happen. So that will be one probably Super Bowl that we'll remember. And I hope we have the same situation next year here in Minnesota. With that, we have a couple, several bills up for us today. And the first bill on the agenda is House File 667. Representative Daniels, please come to the testifiers table with your testifiers. See it over there.
You need a high chair.
You need a high chair. You got one of those good chairs, I see. You know, I think it was in another committee where Representative Loon sat down in a chair like that. She almost hit her chin on the table. So that was interesting. Here we go. Well, welcome to the committee, Representative Daniels. And I understand that you have an author. We'll go with please explain your bill to us first.
All right. Thank you, Chair Detmer. Thank you, committee, for hearing the bill. We're back again. We had some drought problems last time we presented the bill, and I think we got them all straightened out. This bill, did you ever get a handout by chance?
I think I have a page.
Should be enough. This bill is just straightforward. The federal has been working on the Rice County Veterans Memorial since 2008. And I wasn't involved back then, but these two gentlemen to my left were. And they've done a tremendous job in fundraising. They've raised over $330,000 for the project. They're at the finishing stages. There's some more expenses coming up. They have spent all but of about $3,000. To get the memorial finished, and they are short of about $60,000. A little town of Faribault, Rice County, is very generous, but since the start of this project, we've had many new requests coming in that have kind of absorbed the available funds that would normally be donated to a project like this. We've had senior centers going to be expanding by with a big project. Ruth South has been expanding, and so the dollars have been hard coming. They did really well for about the first 7-8 years, and then now we're at the finishing stages and just need a little bit of help to get over the hump. We're looking at $60,000 to finish. We'd like to get the funds out of the legacy funds for arts and history. And with that, I will turn over to Floyd Grandpre. He's got some pictures and illustrations here for us.
I'll use my gym voice. I have a
Sir, would you introduce yourself for the record? Yes, introduce yourself for the record.
Excuse me. Lloyd Grandpre, co-chairman of the Rice County Veterans Memorial Expansion Project and president of Faribault. Is that enough?
Please go ahead. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great. I'll use my gym voice. I have a little in common with your chairman. I was a wrestling coach for
Richfield
for 25 years. So, anyway, it's a pleasure to be here before you today. I made a little mock-up of some of the pictures of where what we have done on this project. And we started, of course, with a... this is an expansion project because we have a Civil War memorial that was placed in 1917 by Daughters of the American Revolution. And we're fortunate enough to get the county commissioners to approve the site, and we went on with design using Anderson Memorial in Boston, Minnesota, and they have done a wonderful job for us. We placed over 800, or will be placing over 800 papers, which we has been the major fundraiser for this project. $300 a piece to buy one, $100 essentially to make them and engrave them, all been placed by volunteers. And a lot of the other things that have taken place here have been installed, and we've had labor in kind from electricians and all kinds of groups to help us. What we're faced with now is the last phase, and that would be adding, we have, this is just a facsimile, it isn't exactly the right size, but we have black granite that would be quarried in northern Minnesota, so stayed away from foreign products. We have a bronze seal of all of the six branches in of service, including the Merchant Marine, which was very important to our war effort in World War II. And it will have the motto of each branch of service on one side, and the reverse side will have the mission statement. I haven't drawn one of those up. But this is the last phase of this project. It will be to purchase this granite and do a few little other small items that will finish the project. Dick Cook, former sheriff of Rice County, also co-chair, give him a chance to speak.
Mr. Cook, could you introduce yourself for the record?
My name is Richard Cook, part of the original committee of the Rice County Veterans Memorial. We are a 501c3. It's called the Americanism Memorial Fund. And as Lloyd and Brian have said, we've raised over $330,000. And we've gone through some tough times. We started this project in 2007, and everybody in the room, I presume, knows that what happened in 2008. So it was a tough road to raise money for the first few years of our project. But our committee persevered. Some of them have since left or have passed away. We have a fairly good-sized committee from the start of patriots and veterans that participated and helped us with the labor and raising funds. And as Lloyd had said, there's been different phases. We've paid for this as we've gone along, and our last portion is to put up the granite for the recognizing the branches of the service that we so want to honor at that site. What also unique to this site is the Civil War Monument, and as many of you may know, Minnesota was one of the first to respond to President Lincoln's request for troops to participate on behalf of preserving the Union, and our first Republican president, as most of you also probably know. And we're of the troops mustered out of Rice County, 76 soldiers from the Union Army either died as a result of combat or their injuries suffered thereafter. And we added through our committee 76 pavers honoring those Union soldiers that gave so much for the Union, and that's part of our project, and we added that through our efforts. So we've dovetailed that with what we're doing at the memorial. We have an eternal flame, we have a bronze eagle flying with a dove, we have benches that we've installed, we have memorial gardens, one for KIA, one for MIA, and the last phase is to honor the benches of the service, as Lloyd had depicted here, and we appreciate the chair and the committee hearing our request today.
Okay, very good. And
let's see. Here we go.
And Deputy Daniels, I understand you have an amendment, author's amendment, to the bill labeled A2. I think everybody has that in their packet to get the bill in the order that you want it. Is that correct?
That is correct. Thank you.
And the chair moves the A2 amendment. And Representative Daniels, please tell us about your amendment.
Mr. Chair, is simply to get the funds from the appropriate committee. We are looking to go through a legacy and request funds from the Historical Society.
Okay. Is there any questions on the A2 amendment? Okay. All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Amendment is adopted. Are there any questions to the author or the testifiers? Any questions? Yeah. Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Daniels, thank you for bringing this forward. The city that I represent, Edina, was lucky and fortunate enough to get funding for such a memorial, so I hope it goes well.
And Representative Rosenthal, I think in the committee where we had discussed, you had even recommended that it go to legacy, and thank you for that advice. And I know talking to Representative Daniels, I thought this was the best route to go to. And to the young men from Faribault, Faribault is my hometown. My dad's a World War II veteran. He still lives there, lives in his home. And so I think it was a few years ago I came and actually spoke down there.
Veterans Day.
Veterans Day. There we go.
2008.
2008 it was. Okay. It's that long ago. Okay. But anyway, Representative Daniels, thank you for bringing this to the committee. The chair moves that House File 667 be amended and be referred to the legacy funding as amended. And all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The House File 662 is as amended is referred to the legacy. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
We're going to hold off on House File 685. There's an amendment that's being drafted as we speak. And Representative O'Neill, you'll take the gavel.
Thank you.
flow.
Chair Detmer, would you like to move your bill? House File 505 that will be re-referred to the pass to the State Government Finance Committee.
No, I just get a better chair.
Chair Detmer, would you like to move your bill, House File 505?
Madam Chair, I'd like to move House File 505 and be referred to State Government Finance.
Thank you. Would you like to present your bill? Chair Detmer, would you like to move your amendment and then speak to the totality of the bill?
I find the amendment here.
Okay. I believe it's the A170029.
Madam Chair, I move the A170029 amendment.
Okay, Chair. And would you like to speak to the amendment, or would you like to just incorporate it and then speak to the bill as in total?
I'd like to just incorporate it.
Okay. Is there any discussion on the A170029 amendment? Okay, seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. 2-year bill.
Madam Chair, the bill provides over the biennium $700,000 grants for 2 years of the Veterans Defense Project. And this Veterans Defense Project is a Minnesota-based nonprofit that focuses on defending veterans in court. And Madam Chair, we have some testifiers here, and I would like them to introduce themselves and testify to the bill.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and continue with your testimony.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill, members of the committee. My name is Brock Hunter. I am a former Army Reconnaissance Scout and now an attorney who focuses the bulk of my practice on representing veterans in the criminal court system. I also have been involved in doing a lot of work outside of the court, advocating for veterans in the justice system, and in that capacity, co-founded and am now the president of the Veterans Defense Project. As Representative Detmer mentioned, we are a Minnesota-based 501c3 nonprofit dedicated to educating and advocating for veterans in the criminal court system. I'd be quick to note that our nonprofit does not provide direct representation of veterans, but is dedicated to making sure that our justice system as a whole does a better job this time around with this generation of veterans than we have in the past. In the few years that we've been in existence, examples of our work include helping draft and pass Minnesota's 2008 veteran sentencing statute that made us the second state in the country to have legislation that advocates that veterans receive treatment over incarceration where appropriate when their offenses are related to psychological injuries from military service. The year after we passed our pioneering legislation here in Minnesota, the U.S. Supreme Court cited that legislation in the landmark case of Porter v. McCollum, the first case in our country's history in which the Supreme Court dealt with combat trauma and advocated that it be considered in criminal sentencing. Since then, we have been drafted into helping other states pass similar legislation, and then more recently in helping establish and train veterans treatment courts here in Minnesota as well as around the country. Most recently, we co-authored and edited a legal treatise on defending veterans in criminal court, the only one of its type in the country. And we've been called upon to brief representatives from the White House, the Department of Defense, and the Department of Veterans Affairs on veterans in the criminal court system. We've also trained thousands of attorneys, judges, prosecutors, police officers, probation officers, and mental health professionals across Minnesota and across the country in how to do better with veterans in the criminal court system. A brief overview of the problem that we face in the coming years. As the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan have ground on now for 15 years, we have a new generation of veterans returning home from the two longest wars in our country's history, fought simultaneously without a draft. And our small, all-voluntary military force has been called upon to serve in a way that no other generation before it has. Many veterans have served multiple deployments in these wars. Marko Milosevic, who you'll hear from here very shortly, served 12 combat deployments as an Army Ranger. And so it's an example of just what this generation of veterans have done on our behalf. While many of our veterans come home from these wars stronger and wiser for their service and immediate assets to their communities, many others unfortunately bring their wars home with them in the form of psychological injuries that they silently suffer from and often fall into self-destructive, reckless, and unfortunately sometimes violent behavior against the very communities that they once risked their lives to protect. Our goal in this advocacy is to ensure that these folks come home and get the help that they need when we identify them in that need. It's often in the back of a squad car or down at the county jail that we first identify a veteran in need, because so often these folks do not raise their hand and ask for help. And Mr. Milosevic will go into detail about why that is the case. To give you a sense of the scale, the U.S. Government released a study in 2012 that found that over 3 million Americans had served in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and that roughly 20% of them were suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, another 20% or so from traumatic brain injury, and noted that these numbers are almost certainly on the low side because so few of these veterans suffering these injuries initially seek help on their own or even report their problems. The same study noted that these conditions, if not properly diagnosed and treated, can lead to criminal conduct and can lead to criminal behavior against these communities that they sought to serve. History tells us that the number of troubled veterans from this generation coming into the courts is going to continue to swell for several more years. Historical research confirms veteran crime waves following every major American conflict. The best data on this comes from the Vietnam War, and studies done by the U.S. government in the years after the war confirmed that large numbers of Vietnam veterans had contact with the criminal court system. A study done by the VA in the mid-1980s found that over half of the veterans it was treating for PTSD had been arrested at least once, more than a third had been arrested two or more times, and nearly 12% convicted of felonies just in the first decade after the Vietnam War. The Department of Justice studies have shown that lingering effect has endured for many years following Vietnam. As of 1998, the DOJ found that there were still hundreds of thousands of Vietnam veterans in the criminal justice system, and continuing to cycle back again and again and again. So the question we now face in our criminal courts today, here in Minnesota and across the country, is what do we do with this new generation of veterans coming home whose criminal offenses are tied to their military service and untreated conditions? Do we repeat mistakes made in the past, demonizing and discarding another generation of veterans as we did those before it? Or do we pursue a more informed approach, harnessing our newfound knowledge of combat trauma, to use a criminal justice contact as an intervention opportunity to ensure troubled veterans receive the help they need and become assets rather than ongoing liabilities to their communities? Though Minnesota has long been at the forefront, as I mentioned, in criminal justice reform in the way we deal with veterans, I fear that we're beginning to fall behind. Many other states now have really jumped on board with this trend and are creating veterans courts at a high rate of speed, whereas Minnesota currently only has 7 of our 87 counties with some form of a veteran treatment court. We can and we need to do better. Our goal in this appropriation is to really put Minnesota back at the forefront, to make us the first state in the country that has some form of a veteran court approach in every jurisdiction, that every judge, prosecutor, defense attorney, public defender, police officer, probation officer in the state is educated on the need and educated on the resources available, both state and federal, to make sure that we take advantage of the criminal justice intersection as an intervention opportunity and help this generation be the next greatest generation. And as I wrap up, I would address one footnote. And that is that there have been some concerns voiced to us among some legislatures about whether our appropriation and our mission overlaps with or contradicts the mission of the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, MACV. I can assure you that's not the case. The Veterans Defense Project has a long symbiotic relationship with MACD. MACD provides civil legal services for veterans, whereas ARG focuses on criminal justice, education, and advocacy. The Veterans Defense Project has for many years provided attorney volunteers at stand down to provide the criminal court component of the stand down court system. And we are also frequently referred attorneys by MACD who are seeking assistance and advice on dealing with veterans in criminal cases. We would like to continue that symbiotic relationship and go forward. And with that, I will turn over the floor to Pete Orpitt, Washington County Attorney and Marine Veteran.
Good afternoon, Commissioners, and I want to thank Commissioner Detmer for having me here, too, and you, Vice Chair. I'm Pete Orpitt. I'm the Washington County Attorney. I've been a prosecutor for over 30 years. I served active duty Marine Corps as well as several years in the Army Reserve, but that's not why I'm here. I'm here because I've come to rely on Brock Hunter, Ryan Else, and a number of other people to help me do the right thing in criminal court because, unfortunately, there are hundreds, maybe thousands, of wonderful veterans like Marko Milosevic, whom you'll hear, that end up coming through our criminal justice system. And I'm reminded that these gentlemen, and women as well, didn't go into service as a criminal, and I'd never see them but for some of the multiple deployments, indefinite times in combat, and they come back, and of course they self-medicate, and sooner or later they and I meet. I've relied on Brock Hunter for one big thing to get a veterans court in Washington County when I was elected in 2011. First thing I did was set up a veterans diversion program for, again, folks like Marko. We've screened 72 people, including two women who are victims of military combat trauma, sexual trauma. And if not for the Veterans Defense Project, I wouldn't have gotten my project up, and that would be 72 people who wouldn't have got the same kind of attention and justice. It's all about doing the right thing to the right person. That's how we view it in our office, and we need folks like the Veterans Defense Project to educate our bench and us to get it right. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and continue with your testimony.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill and committee members for allowing me the opportunity to be here. My name is Marko Milosevic, and I am the face of the veteran that Brock Hunter was referring to. I'm going to start just giving you a brief background of myself and the nature of my service. I joined the Army. I was 17 years old, and I joined in April of 2001, right before 9/11. I was just planning on doing my 4 years and collecting my GI Bill and getting out of the service. When 9/11 happened, I was in training going to airborne school. I had just graduated from the basic infantry course. Shortly after airborne school, the Ranger recruiter came around, and I was 18 at that point, and they needed more members to join the 75th Ranger Regiment because we were deploying shortly. I went through the Ranger Assessment Selection Program, which back then was called the Ranger Indoctrination Program, or RIP. Upon completion of that, I was on a probationary status at the 75th Ranger Regiment, and I deployed for my first time, not even having completed all my training. When I returned home, I finished Ranger U.S. Army Ranger School, and I've been to numerous different schools throughout the United States military, some in an official capacity, and some not in an official capacity as a member of the Joint Special Operations Commander, JSOC. I did 12 combat deployments, and each time I came home from those deployments, I felt less and less a part of this world. I was 17 years old, and I saw the world in black and white, and I had one tool in my toolbox to solve my problems, and that tool was violence. That's the only tool you need when you're in a war. At the age of 31, I was medically separated from the military due to wounds and injuries sustained in combat, which is another difficult thing for somebody to process. I didn't choose to leave the game. The game kind of chose to leave me, and that was a hard thing to deal with, a hard pill to swallow. So at the age of 31, having existed my entire adult life in war or training to go to war, I was released into the world with a handshake and an attaboy and an American flag from the military, and I was pretty disillusioned. I still saw the world in black and white, and I still had that same tool in my toolbox. And I got into some trouble. I drank more than I should have. I was using drugs and trying to cope with all my issues. I wound up landing myself in the Beltrami County Jail, and I was facing a third-degree felony assault, at which point in my life I met Mr. Hunter here. And it was because of him as my defense attorney and as a phenomenal lawyer and now somebody I consider a mentor in life, has really stuck their neck out for me and gave me an opportunity to turn it all around. Since then, I've attended Bemidji State University, Representative Detmer's alma mater, and I just moved down here to Forest Lake. I am currently attending Metro State University, and due to all the work I've been doing, I have a 4.0 GPA, and Metro State University is giving me the opportunity to actually write my own curriculum on an independent studies course. I'm thinking about setting something up, since veterans are a subculture in our society, thinking of kind of modeling it after other subgroups in our society, kind of like Native American studies or gender studies. I'm thinking about doing something along the lines of a veteran studies undergraduate. I have aspirations of going to law school, and I was just recently contacted by members of the Tillman Scholarship to fill out an application in which they would help offset my costs for law school. The goal is to go to St. Thomas. But again, if it wasn't for these veterans courts or these intervention opportunities, I would have had the book thrown at me. And we know through the research that Brock's done in his book that almost 80% of veterans returning home from combat will struggle with alcohol abuse, drug addiction, domestic violence, or run-ins with the law of some sort or another. And we also know that if we throw the book at these combat veterans, the recidivism rate is far higher than that of the average everyday citizen. And I ask judges all the time if they've ever thanked a veteran for their service, or sheriffs if they've ever thanked a veteran for their service. And they always say, of course. And I said, well, then here's an opportunity to really thank veterans for their service and give them a second chance that they deserved since they served our country in an honorable capacity. And with that, I'd like to thank you for your time.
Mr. Molosh, thank you so much for your service. Thank you for your testimony today. I also am a Bemidji State grad, along with you, and the chair. And I actually was the member that pushed specialty courts to be allowed across the entire state. So all 87 counties are now eligible to have a specialty court. And I've been a couple times on the veterans courts nearby. So I couldn't agree more. And we have some member questions with that.
Fantastic.
Representative McQuaid.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you so much for your testimony and for bringing this to the committee. I just wanted to say to all of you and to Representative Detmer, as we continue to look at ways to decrease the racial disparities in Minnesota and deal with criminal justice in a different way, this does both things, and it's a really, really good bill, and I'm so glad to be signed on to it and to support it today, and thank you so much for coming and giving your testimony. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Great testimony by everyone. And Mr. Milosevic, welcome home.
Thank you. It's a privilege to be home.
And thank you for your service to the people of our country. Your story strikes me in somewhat of a personal manner. 17 years old, 31 years old, just in the prime of your life, and your chosen career of 14 years has been rugs and pulled off from underneath you on that for some things that are probably not of your making or your design. Please, if I'm getting too personal, just tell me and I'll back off on that. No. When your separation from the U.S. Selective Services, did you receive any VA benefits from as a result of your injuries that you received, sir?
Absolutely. Currently, I am, according to the VA, I am 100% permanent and total disabled. And then I also really receive what's called a combat-related special compensation. Essentially, due to no fault of my own, because I couldn't complete my 20-year enlistment, but I had shown the intent to do so, they went through my VA disability packet, and they have assessed that 100% of what is in my VA disability packet is directly attributable to wounds sustained in combat. Therefore, they basically gave me 100% of what my retirement would have been at my current rank I was, which is, I believe that's how it all shakes out. There's a lot of math that I, over my head, so, but yeah.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you. Mr. Milosevic, just a couple of follow-ups on that. Were you also eligible then for education benefits through your GI Bill, and are you also eligible as a discharged veteran, honorably discharged, but due to your disabilities, eligible for care full-time through the VA Medical Center?
Mr. Milosevic.
Yes, sir. I am currently using my Chapter 31 post-9/11 GI Bill benefits, which is really, I'm grateful that the Department of Defense decided to, I joined under the Montgomery GI Bill program, but they gave the option to the vet to use either or, and the post-9/11 GI Bill program has been the best fit for me. Also, I do receive ongoing care at the Veteran Affairs in St. Cloud. I have a great primary care doctor up there, and I've had nothing but good things to say about the VA. As a matter of fact, I often mentor younger veterans, and I do volunteer at the VA from time to time. A lot of veterans have chips on their shoulder when they get out, and I always tell them a few pieces of advice. You know, don't go to the VA wearing ripped up clothing, put on a pair of slacks, tuck your shirt in, like we used to do in the military. Yes, sir, no, sir. And it's not the healthcare provider's fault if things are broken within the VA system. I think everybody knows that there are problems with the VA system, but those are often at administrative levels. So I try to tell them to, you know, you'll get more flies with honey, essentially, than with vinegar, and hopefully change some of their minds about the VA a little bit.
Mr. Milosevic, one final question for you. I have authored a bill for the last several years that's having to do with providing law enforcement officials with additional money and training on de-escalation training.
Yeah.
And I'm hearing your story today, think that you might be a candidate who might have had their life saved as a result of that kind of training. And again, just to give you a little bit of background, if you're not familiar with it, there are others who are at the committee today. This is to provide special skills and training for law enforcement officials who, when they may come to a situation that's a domestic situation or other, that there's a veteran on the other side of that, that they understand the issues and that they understand the specialized training that people may have and the pressure that might be on the other side of the door before law enforcement enters to deal with that. Would you have comments as to whether or not you think that that would be something that would be, have been helpful for you or has been helpful for you in situations you might have found yourself in, and if you think that that's something that the Minnesota State Legislature should continue to fund? Again, if any of those questions are too personal, I fully understand.
No, thank you. The one of the best pieces of advice I ever got post-military was from this man right here, and he told me to embrace my narrative, and I have. Instead of, you know, running or shirking from my story, I totally embrace it, and I found that being open and honest and candid about my story gives other veterans the ability to look at me and look at the nature of my service and give them a little bit of hope. And part of what I do myself is when I was up in Bemidji, I from time to time visit the Beltrami County Jail, and I try to speak with other veterans and give them, ask them for one if they're getting their VA benefits, and if they're not, we try to do the paperwork right there in the jail, because let's be frank, they're not going anywhere for a little bit. And this give them sort of a light at the end of the tunnel speech. And I know for me, when I was in the Beltrami County Jail, spending the weekend in there and kind of contemplating my life and what landed me there, I had the opportunity to speak to a few corrections officers who are still members of the Minnesota National Guard, the Red Bulls. And they actually went and spoke to the judges on my behalf before I even went to my bail or my arraignment hearing. And just as veterans, they were knowledgeable about me and my situation and actually took the opportunity to speak to a judge on my behalf, and I was released on my own recognizance, which is almost unheard of for any sort of felony charges. And those guys intuitively knew how to do it because they were veterans. I can see much added benefit. I know a fellow veteran, Hector Matic-Estio, who would probably vouch for de-escalation training within the law enforcement. I very much think it would be beneficial, and if there's any assistance you need or input from myself, I'd be more than willing to help you with that.
Okay. All right. We're going to move on. Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple questions I have, if that's permitted. And first of all, just a comment that I would like to say that I am grateful to hear your testimony today and to learn your narrative to hear this information. The first question I have is, I'm hearing in this request for additional funding that you want to expand out and reach more counties. Is that correct?
Representative O'Neill, members of the commission, yes. We have been working for years doing our best to educate criminal justice professionals across the state on these issues, and we've reached quite a few. But like a lot of the veterans that we work with, we've not always been the best at asking for help and assistance, and we've been doing everything that we've been doing up to this point unfunded, unsubsidized. And as I said, I see a great need that we've done a lot of good work here in Minnesota, but there's so much left to do. Only 7 of our 87 counties have some kind of programming like this. And though I've spoken to hundreds of criminal justice professionals across the state, there are thousands and thousands more that have not heard the message. And even those who have heard our message have heard usually just a little piece, an hour or an hour and a half of what we can do. And we can provide much more comprehensive, intensive training that will help all of these jurisdictions come up to speed. So, yes, we need, in order to continue what we've been doing and to expand it to the level that it really should be expanded, we need some additional help in order to do this on a more systemic and formalized manner.
Representative Carr, follow-up?
Thank you. The next question I have is actually something I asked when we were talking about the training with law enforcement is, you know, if we're talking about illnesses as a result of combat service, and if we're talking about addictions probably also relating to that illness, the kind of work that you're doing, are you in conversation with other groups that are working with individuals with mental illnesses and with addictions in our criminal justice system?
Mr. Hunter.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill, Representative Pryor. Yes. I, for many years, served as the legislative chair for the Minnesota Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers and have pushed a lot of different issues that deal with mental health and the criminal justice system. Very familiar and have good working relationships with NAMI and other groups here in Minnesota that are working on these issues. And I've also come to see the veterans issue as the proverbial foot in the door, so to speak, in the criminal court system to help the justice system understand and embrace the way that mental illness plays a major role in a lot of offenses among veterans and non-veterans alike, and that oftentimes it's veterans garner more sympathy and understanding among a lot of folks, and if we can understand mental health issues in their capacity, I have hope that on a larger scale the justice system can come to understand the way that mental health plays a role in criminal offenses in general.
Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So my question is also for Mr. Hunter. And I was wondering, I also serve on the Public Safety Committee, and we've recently heard from the public defenders. And so I'm wondering if you could speak a little bit to how you think the funds would potentially be allocated. You talked about education, outreach, and legal assistance. And so I'm just curious how much of that is going to go to direct representation.
Mr. Hunter.
And to be clear, none of this funding would be going to direct representation of veterans. I don't think that's even allowed under the rules here in Minnesota. But it would go extensively to training. First and foremost, public defenders and private criminal defense attorneys who are going to be representing veterans in the coming years. I've already been doing a lot of that work unsubsidized and spoken in front of probably most of the public defenders in the state, but usually in a shorter presentation to just give them a taste of what we're dealing with and how they can deal with it in the courts. In an ideal situation, we would put every public defender in the state through a more comprehensive training program, and that is contemplated within the appropriation we're talking about here, as well as providing similar training to the private defense bar, but also judges, prosecutors, police officers, and probation officers, anyone in the system that is dealing with veterans. We'd like to get our message in front of them and help them understand how they can use available resources that are already out there to do a better job.
Thank you. Yeah, just a quick follow-up. So I just wanted to clarify what the legal assistance idea was in the appropriation.
And Madam Chair, just to make it clear that the bill appropriates, the $350,000 per year, and it then is appropriate to the Department of Veterans Affairs for grants, to be given out as grants. So the money would be, the oversight is with the Department of Veterans Affairs.
Thank you.
Okay. Moving on. Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, thank you, Mr. Orpid and Mr. Hunter, for the work you did on the statute requiring combat trauma to be considered in sentencing. Who carried that bill for you when you brought it up? Do you remember?
I believe it was Senator Mahoney in the House, or Representative Mahoney in the House, and I am struggling. It's been so many years, I can't recall in the Senate.
That's fine. Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just curious, because it's little things like that that we can pass around here, and bills like this, all the stuff that you've done, all the things that Mr. Orpid has done, is enabled by an atmosphere in the public that generally likes and appreciates veterans to the extent they understand it. I mean, the public looks at the military and veterans as monolithic, that inured to their detriment after Vietnam and inures to their benefit now in the wake of the war on terror. But it causes me to think, you know, after World War II, I'm a fan of watching old reruns TV shows, and in the 50s and 60s, those old TV shows, all kinds of military references to chain of command, whether you're talking about Star Trek or something, because the general public kind of understood and got the nature of military command and what happened. You don't see that much anymore on mainstream TV shows, because where almost 20% of the nation wore the uniform at some point in the 40s, you know, we've got less than 0.5% fighting our wars. So it causes me to wonder, how soon will this goodwill wave upon which we are riding to enable bills like this, the other bill you passed, how soon will that fade? And what happens when it does fade? So we can do this now, and that's excellent. But at what point what do we need to do to sustain that so that people understand it, especially when, you know, in the 50s, everybody knew someone in their family who served. Now, it's really hard to get that. So that's my question for you. And then the other request I'd make is, Mr. Milosevic, when you do that that undergraduate program, I would be really intrigued to see if a component of it involved anything like that.
Mr. Milosevic.
Absolutely, and it's good to see you again. I don't know if you remember, I sat at your table during the Medal of Honor convention.
That's right.
Yeah, I was like, I know him, and I just remembered. could you repeat your question over?
thank you, Madam Chair. If the goodwill that enables legislation like this fades in subsequent years, first of all, how do we sustain it to get people to really understand what it is like to go through what veterans do like you did? And then what do we do if it does fade? What happens to us then?
Mr. Hunter.
Representative Lepp, that is the challenge before us. In these conflicts, we've done it without the draft. And as you said, less than 1% of our nation have been in uniform during these conflicts. Less than half of that 1% have deployed to the two longest wars in our country's history, fought simultaneously. It's really an unprecedented situation we face with a small generation of veterans coming home who've served and sacrificed in many ways like none other before them. And the public really is in many ways apathetic and disconnected towards the sacrifices made by this generation. And I think it's a challenge that we need to face on many fronts. I do think that this appropriation and helping educate the justice system and all of its stakeholders will go a long way to ensuring this generation of veterans receives the respect and the constructive approach that they deserve to move on with their life and become assets and not ongoing liabilities in their communities. But I think it's going to take a multi-tiered approach to keep the public engaged and informed and empathetic to what we are calling on this generation of veterans to do. And it's something that everyone in this room, I think, is going to have to take part in if we're going to succeed.
Thank you, Mr. Hunter.
If I could just add, Madam Chair and Representative Rush, I think what we saw after Vietnam was the public blamed the troops for the policymakers' decisions. So troops were treated poorly after Vietnam. And now I think we've come as a society to where we understand the policymakers and the troops are completely different. Let's not blame the troops for political decisions made by policymakers. And I think that's why we've seen such goodwill towards veterans, but I don't take it for granted, and it could be gone tomorrow.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. This is a public hearing. Are there any members of the public that would like to testify for or speak, have concerns with the bill? Okay, seeing none, we have the author's final comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I think this is another example of what Minnesota is in the process of doing to make Minnesota a better place for our veterans as they come back and reintegrate into our society and go on with their careers and their family life. And I'd like to mention to people that are involved in this, is if most of us speak with one voice, things will get done. So, Madam Chair, I again move that we refer State House File 505 to the State Government Committee on State Government Finance.
Okay, Representative Detmer renews his motion that House File 505, as amended, be referred to the State Government Finance Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Same sign. Motion prevails. Okay, members, I believe we're going to revert back to House File 685, and if Representative Uglem would come down, please.
Okay, our next bill is House File 685. Representative Uglem, please come. You're already here at the testify table with your testifiers. There's an author amendment. I see you have an author's amendment being distributed. And Representative Uglem, would you tell about your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A3 simply does a couple of things. One, it includes in the bill the one-day permit or the annual permit. That is on 1-2, 1-3, page 1, line 8, delete 1 and insert 1 or 4. It's a minor change there. But on page 2, lines 8 and 9, we want to restate the stricken language in the bill to the total and permanent service-related disability. That is the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Okay, we've got your... Does everybody have the amendment? Okay. Any questions on the amendment? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Representative Uglem, your bill now is before us as amended. Welcome to the committee again, and please tell us about your bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the bill. It's House File 685, and to refer that to the House Environment Bill, our Environment Committee also, sir.
Okay, go ahead and talk about your bill.
Well, this bill, Mr. Chair, thank you, and thank you, members of the committee. This bill is a small bill. It's an effort to expand a little bit for our veterans, for our active service members, to get passes to the state national or state parks, one-day permits and annual permits, and also to include their dependents. I think that's pretty important. The situation where our service members come back
from overseas, fought for our country, and worked very hard. When the opportunity presents itself, we want to make it as easy as possible for them to enjoy some of the best Minnesota has to offer, and to make it as simple for them and their dependents to go to a state park and enjoy that at no cost.
And then you've got some testifiers here.
Yes, I do. Mr. Chair, I'll let them introduce themselves, and we'll take it from there.
And please introduce yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, my name is Ralph Donay. I'm the chairman or director or whatever title you want to lay on me of the United Veterans Legislative Council. Okay. I'm a 30-year retired Marine, and I'm here today to kind of let you know that I've had generals from other states come to our meeting and say, what's going on in Minnesota? How come you guys do so much stuff for veterans? Well, this is part of it, ladies and gentlemen. This is why Minnesota should be one of the best places in the United States for our veterans and their families to live. Now, this is just one of many ways to help. It doesn't solve all the problems. Not everybody can afford a pass, or it does lighten the load, I guess, a little bit on the park people to give them some more defined rules of how to issue these passes. So we support this issue wholeheartedly for the United Veterans Legislative Council.
Welcome to the committee. Could you identify yourself for the record?
Members of the committee, my name is Jerry Kaiser. I'm the vice chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council. I'm like Ralph, a Vietnam combat veteran. And I did 22 months, 17 days, and 6 hours in there, if you're counting. Okay. And when we came back 46 and a half years ago for me, nobody cared. Nobody. And I had 3 days of, before I was got out in 1970, I got home on a Monday, I was back in college on Thursday the same week. I had some reintegration problems. This is just another way that we can help these men and women coming back to get acclimated again and just not have a pressure. Our motto in one of the organizations I have is involved with is never again will veterans ever be treated like we were. And that, in fact, was happened. Nobody cared for us for about 20 years until the VA started realizing that there is such a thing as post-traumatic stress. And then, so slowly but surely, we started coming around. I personally never went to the VA for 37 years because I was just plain stupid and didn't think they really cared. And it took me a long time to come through that, and I just listened to this other gentleman, and I'm so grateful that there's other people out there caring for these men. So we are involved with this. I'm sure the Department of DNR is concerned about the cost it costs to do this, but whatever they can work out. Right now, if you're a 100% disabled veteran, you get a free pass. If you're a disabled veteran, you go back and forth. You can go in every day, and then you have to go back and get a pass for the next day. So if there's some way that we can work it out, if that doesn't have to happen to certain levels of disability, which I don't know how to equate to. 70 to 100%, I don't know. It's beyond us to figure that out. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the committee? That's Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you. I think this is a great bill. Representative Ulam, what have the conversations been like with the DNR, and where do they stand now?
Representative Ulam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenthal. Well, there is some concern that there's a slight cost involved here. This will go to the Environmental Policy and Finance Committee. We will look at some of those costs there. There could be an amendment or two in the future.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I'm not really worried about the cost. Is there any technical changes that need to be made?
Representative Rosenthal, there's, in order to get this bill ready for prime time, I would like to basically better define the term with active personnel. I think we need to do that, and then we should be in fine shape.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Fryer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The question I have is kind of like the communication piece of this. So you're talking about, you know, showing respect, honoring our veterans returning, honoring our active duty service members. Is there a part of this program where people would know that they have access to this these kinds of benefits and that it's in recognition of their service?
Representative Oakland?
Representative Fryer? I'm really not sure what is planned in terms of communication for this bill. If it does pass, I would certainly be hopeful that the DNR would be able to have those facilities available and communications available in the future.
Was that prior? Okay. Any other questions from the committee? Are there any people in the audience that would like to speak towards the bill? Is there anybody from the DNR here?
Mr. Chair, if I could just make one more comment.
Mr. Donese?
The county veteran service officers in every county do a really good job of letting veterans that come back know what's going on in the state. They help them get their GI Bill stuff done. They get them to the VA. They're right there to help, and I'm sure that something like this would be immediately brought out to them when they get back.
Yeah, thank you. Would you introduce yourself for the committee, please?
Mr. Chair and committee, my name's Peter Hark. I'm the operations manager for the Division of Parks and Trails at the DNR.
Welcome to committee.
Thank you.
Do you have some information for us?
Well, I think we are supportive of this bill. Obviously, it's a bill that's in place. We're trying to make changes that will create greater efficiencies, administrative efficiencies, and that's really key. One of the things that is burdensome is that we, someone that's disabled and is allowed to come in and get a daily pass, they have to do that every time they want to enter a park. And we're just saying, let's kick that out of the door and make this, simplify this for not only the staff in our parks that are trying to manage that, but for the veterans and disabled veterans that are able to utilize this bill and language. So it's really about simplifying and streamlining. So there are a few minor things in here that we'd like to have some more discussion about, but overall we, you know, fully support this bill. Also, on an annual basis, we do promote this across the state through news releases and other ways, and so we have been trying to do a much better job in making sure that our veterans are aware of these types of opportunities. So,
thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Hart? And I'm sure you're going to be before the next committee. You're going to be working with the DNR and getting the language exactly the way you want it.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
The chair removes his motion that the House File 685, as amended, be re-referred to the Environment and Natural Resources Policy and Finance Committee. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 685, as amended, is re-referred to the Committee on Environment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Appreciate it.
Here, the next, we're moving right along here. Next on the agenda is House File 16. Representative Johnson, please come to the testifiers table with your testifiers. And I think our next committee meeting, we're going to make sure we got some higher seating chairs there for the testifiers. Welcome, Representative Johnson, and I will move House File 16 before the committee and is being referred to the Taxes Committee. Representative Johnson, The bill is before us, so welcome to the committee, and please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill, House File 16, the purpose of this bill, members, is to extend a current income tax credit to more veterans, in particular low-income and disabled veterans. Currently, Minnesota provides an income tax credit up to $750 to veterans who have served at least 20 years or have a disability of 100%. And current law phases this credit out at a rate of 10% when the adjusted gross income equals $30,000, with no credit for incomes of $37,500 or higher. And this current law was enacted in 2008. What this bill does is increase the income level at which credit phase out begins from that $30,000 to $50,000, with no credit allowed for incomes of $57,000 or higher. And it also expands, this is the other major thing, it also expands eligibility by extending credit to all disabled veterans who have a compensable service-connected disability. And this bill, Mr. Chair, was in the final omnibus tax bill that was agreed to in the conference committee tax bill last year, for what it's worth. And I have two testifiers here. They'll answer questions for the sake of committee time and so forth. They'll answer questions as needed, but I'll let them introduce themselves.
Go ahead. Introduce yourself for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Peggy Moon, and I am the legislative chairman for the American Legion Department of Minnesota. I am a past commander of the American Legion. I served in the Air Force towards the end of the Vietnam War.
Please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and representatives of the committee. My name is Todd Kemmery. I am a Marine. Currently, I am the Vice President, and I also am part of the legislative team of the Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our office is over at the VA Hospital at the Spinal Cord Injury Center, and that's the short version.
Yeah. Thank you. Welcome. And Representative Johnson, is this the language in that you have right here, is that the same language that was in the tax bill that was vetoed last session?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for that question. The language did change a little bit in conference committee. I can read to you what it was, and that states that the bill increased the credit for past military service from $750 to $1,000, increased the income level at which the credit begins to phase out from $30,000 to $50,000, with full phase out at $60,000. So that was the final language in this particular bill.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions from the committee? And are the testifiers done testifying?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just add one thing. You know, in the American Legion, we represent about 76,000 veterans throughout the state of Minnesota. And any time that we can help any of our veterans, not only just to honor them, thank them for the service, but to also invest in them and encourage more veterans to come and reside in Minnesota, the American Legion will certainly support that cause. And that's why I'm here.
Okay. Thank you.
I'll just add to that just a small comment on behalf of, as a disabled veteran, I've been in the wheelchair for 34 years. I am 100% service connected. However, some of the adjudicating costs and finances that go along with being in a wheelchair are not always covered by the VA healthcare system. So out-of-pocket expenses can be a hurdle, if you will. So any time that there's a financial relief, even if something is small for those of us that are limited with their finances, it is very helpful. I don't have to worry about exchanging a choice for something for one for the other. I can now accomplish to do two things. And basically that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your yes.
I realize that time is precious in the committee, but I just want to get quick clarification on this. This is different than what we did for the benefits last year for military pensions. So if I understand this bill correctly, this is other earned income that individuals may have to receive a $750 tax credit. Am I correct on that, Representative Johnson?
Representative Johnson?
I believe that is correct. Ms. Roberts, maybe you could clarify that. Mr. Chair.
I would like to make probably a comment on that myself. I think veterans have an option, either or, to take the exemption on the veterans' pension or stay with this option. That's what my understanding. And we have nonpartisan tax in the back. Please come to the table and introduce yourself for us. Hey, watch out for that chair, by the way.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the provision that was enacted in the supplemental appropriation bill last year is a subtraction for military retirees who receive retirement income and their survivors. So that is generally going to be for people who had 20 years or more of service in the military and receive a pension, or their survivors. People who receive disability benefits from the military, those benefits were already exempt at the federal level and at the state level. This credit for past military service is for individuals who are low income or who have separated from the military with a disability. So it's sort of a different population. For this credit that's was in law before last year, you could receive the credit if you had a disability and were low income, but you didn't have to have any retirement income from the military in order to claim the credit. And that would still be the case. It would just expand it to a broader group of disabled veterans. So it's sort of two different populations. And there was some language in the military retirement subtraction in the appropriations bill that provided that you would claim one or the other but not both. Generally, someone who is eligible for the subtraction would claim that rather than this credit.
Thank you. Mrs. Manzi.
Oh, yes, sir. I didn't identify myself. Nina Manzi from House Research.
There you go. And I guess I was probably correct there that a veteran can decide if he's eligible for the pension exemption, but this one might bring in more income for him. He can decide which one he wants. Am I correct?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to clarify, that would be other income other than exempted income from pensions, military pensions, which we did last year, and other disability benefits that are exempt under federal and state right now. So it would be other income that I would have as a veteran that this could be used as an offset. Am I?
Ms. Manson?
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, this is what's in this bill is a credit rather than a subtraction. A subtraction works in that you subtract it from your income in arriving at your taxable income, and then you apply the rates to your taxable income to determine your tax. A credit works in that you have already figured what your tax is, and then you get to reduce your tax by the amount of the credit. So there isn't any interaction with any kind of income at all with this particular credit. You simply have figured your tax based on your taxable income, and then you're allowed to claim the credit against whatever your tax is, and you're not required to have any particular kind of income to use the credit.
Mr. Driscoll.
Chair, I really hate to do this, but I'd like to know what I'm voting on, and it sounds like a good program, but I'm still a little confused, maybe now more so since the last explanation. If I worked at X company and I made $35,000 a year, and I was a disabled veteran, I could be eligible for the $750 credit. Is that correct?
Ms. Manson?
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, that's correct.
Mr. Chair?
Representative O'Driscoll.
And if I were a 20-year veteran drawing a military pension and working at company X making $35,000 a year under last year's, that would be a subtraction of taxable income.
and then I would still be eligible for the $750 tax credit on the other income.
Ms. Manson?
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, there was language in the supplemental appropriations bill that sort of indicated that a person would claim one or the other, but not both. And that language was a little, it wasn't worded the way it should be, and I think we're going to see a technical correction to that put forward by the Department of Revenue later this year. The Department of Revenue is administering the credit that's in current law and the subtraction that was enacted last year as though a person can claim one or the other, but not both, if they qualify for both. And it's my understanding, and Representative Detmer can speak to this as the author of the provision last year, that that was the intent of the provisions in the House and the Senate last year.
Mr. Driscoll, that was the intent.
Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, I was looking around the table as I was asking this question. There's a lot of heads are going back and forth. I think I'm not the only one that had the question on that. So I think for the clarification, I think the author has some questions, too, at that point on it. So I think we've got everything squared, or at least I think I've got an understanding here.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Yeah, the language in the supplemental appropriations bill said that the income used to claim the subtraction could not be used to claim the credit. Well, as I tried to explain, you don't need to have any particular kind of income to claim the credit. And I think the department read that language to mean that you would claim one or the other, but not both, and they'll be proposing a technical correction to that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mrs. Nancy. Are there any other questions from the committee, or are there any other questions from the audience that would like to make comments on this piece of legislation? If not, the chair removes. First of all, Representative Johnson, any closing remarks, Representative Johnson?
No, Mr. Chair, thank you.
Okay. The chair removes the motion. The House File 16 be referred to the Taxes Committee. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 16 is re-referred to taxes. And Representative Johnson, you won't be going far. House File 17. I will move House File 17 before the committee, and that it be re-referred to Transportation Finance Committee. And Representative Johnson, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair. What this bill does is pretty simple. It exempts veterans who are at least 30% disabled from paying the motor vehicle registration tax, and it extends the current exemption to any car owned by the disabled veteran rather than only vehicles furnished by the U.S. government, which is current law. I also spoke, Mr. Chair, I'm going to look for your advice on this, to Thomas Henderson from the Vehicle Service Program Director, who's here in the audience, and he's asking for an enactment date of October 1st on this bill. I don't know if I can add that at this time as an author's amendment, or otherwise I could have an amendment drafted for a Transportation Committee if it moves there.
Representative Johnson, to make it speed things up here, why don't you just have it drafted for the next committee?
I'll do that. Thank you for your advice there. And I'll get a little testimony here from the gentleman to my right.
Again, please introduce yourself for the committee again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee representatives. My name is Todd Kemmery. I'm with the Paralyzed Veterans of America Minnesota chapter. As a disabled veteran, I just recently had to register my vehicle, and I know some of my fellow veterans that have to register their vehicles. If you have a newer vehicle, then you pay more for that, and all of us are aware of that. Mine was my current vehicle is 8 years old, so I had an $81 chance to be able to help out with the finances here in Minnesota. My point I'm probably getting to is this, that again, for some of us that are just that have monthly expenses that keep choices down to a minimum, this is another opportunity to be able to not only own a vehicle but to be able to maintain it, and any sort of break on that, I think we're all agreed upon on that, to keep your vehicle on the road would be very beneficial. after having said that, I think that's pretty much the point here that I was trying to make. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Again, I am Peggy Moon, legislative chairman for the American Legion State of Minnesota. And we, too, agree with this bill. Again, anything that we can do to assist our veterans, make life in Minnesota a little bit easier on them, and help attract other veterans to Minnesota, we are in favor of. Thank you.
Any questions from the committee? Yes. Representative O'Driscoll.
I just hate to be the squeaky wheel on this, but I just...
Go for it. I
like the direction this bill is going, except as I'm thinking practically on this from other bills that we've had. Should this be a situation where we might want to have the author consider an amendment at some point on this, either in this committee or a committee down the line? The disabled veteran owns that, and we just define the disabled veteran. What happens if the veteran doesn't have a license, is not able to own a vehicle and get insurance, but a spouse is taking care of that veteran because of their the nature of their disability? It really doesn't accomplish providing that veteran for the benefit that we would be providing another veteran who had a license that was maybe in the same disability situation.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Representative Johnson, is it something that you've taken note on?
Yeah, I'll take note of that, and thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll we'll talk with Representative O'Driscoll to see if we can address that between now and the next committee.
Okay.
If that's satisfactory.
Are there any people from the audience like to testify? Representative Johnson, any closing remarks, or was that your closing remarks?
That was my closing remark, Mr. Chair.
With that, the Chair renews the motion that House File 17 be re-referred to Transportation Finance Committee. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 17 is re-referred to Transportation Finance. And Representative Johnson, being that you got your seat all warmed up there, why don't we just continue on with your next bill on the agenda is House File 51, and I will move House File 51 before the committee. That is, it will be re-referred to the Taxes Committee. And Representative Johnson, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair. This bill deals with increasing a disabled veteran's property taxes exclusion. And looking at the bill, you can see that it increases the veteran's market value exclusion with a disability rating of 70% or more. Currently, the law reads that those veterans have the first $150,000 of the market value of their home is excluded from before determining the taxable value. And what this bill does, the amount of exclusion changes to 300,000 times the disability percentage, and that was the formula that seemed to work the best to deal with increasing that tax exclusion. This bill has been heard in the Senate Veteran and Military Affairs Finance Policy Committee and sent to the Senate Tax Committee, so it has had attention there and moved forward. And again, Mr. Kemmer will speak to the bill.
Briefly. Again, introduce yourself now for this.
I shall. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Demmer. Todd Kemmery. With the Paralyzed Veterans of America Minnesota chapter, I'm currently the vice president, and I'm also part of the legislative team. Thank you, Mr. Chair and representatives, for the ability to speak on behalf of my fellow veterans. I am a recipient of this very generous benefit from the state of Minnesota. However, again, for not wanting to sound like a broken record here, To include up to the 70%, my 70, 80, 90% disabled veteran, is something that all of us service organizations, we have the same goal in mind. A veteran is a veteran, and for some veterans, a disability rating may prevent them from having some benefits that are actually very needed. So again, and may I just add a little bit to this, and I'll deviate a little bit about from this only to the point of trying to explain service the percentage. I'm a peacetime veteran. I was hurt while I was still in the Marine Corps, and therefore I'm 100% service connected. My category that the VA healthcare system, now I'm a severely disabled, catastrophically disabled veteran, which means I'm eligible for R1, R2. Those are just other types of levels of compensation. But there are some veterans out there that are 70%, 80% service-connected, and they've gone through some very horrifying experiences, combat-related. And these gentlemen and women, just because of the disability rating, I guess my point I'm trying to get to is it doesn't tell the whole story of what the individual is. And I think that's what we're trying to do here is to include more people and not just a blanket cover somebody by just a disability rating. There, getting back to on track on the explanation part of this, it is a added benefit for more the number of veterans here in Minnesota. So that's why we are behind this, and we hope that the testimony that we give today will help convince the rest of you here that's what's needed. And again, thank you.
And again, I'm Peggy Moon, Legislative Chairman for the American Legion Department of Minnesota. I have a small disability, but I certainly don't qualify for this one. So I believe that I would probably be one of those people whose taxes would probably go up a little bit on my house to make sure that other people, the veterans in my area, are taken care of. And I certainly don't mind that. I like seeing that our veterans with the larger percentages of disabilities are taken care of. I feel they deserve it. And I think that this just keeps up with the changing home values that happen in our state. And I know many veterans that this would help tremendously. So again, for that reason, and making us a more friendly state to veterans, the American Legion does support this bill. Thank you.
Are there any questions from the committee? Are there any questions from the audience? And Representative Johnson, any closing remarks?
Well, thank you for your time and patience in moving these bills forward.
And the chair removes the motion of House File 51 be referred to the Taxes Committee. And all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 51 is referred to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
And the next bill on the agenda is my bill, House File 647, and Representative Rosenthal, would you take the gavel? Mr. Chair.
Chair Detmer, would you like to move your bill before the committee? And
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 647 and be referred to state government.
Legacy funding.
State government finance.
I believe it's legacy funding.
I got the wrong one.
Yeah.
Too many bills here, I'm sorry. House File 505 and be referred to legacy. There we go. I got it right.
Thank you, Chair Detmer. I'd like to present your bill.
Well, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, you've heard this bill before. It's the same bill that we talked about before. And what I'm doing is a dual track in terms of the funding mechanism. And I've talked to people. We figured we should probably also go with the legacy funding for this also and see where we can go from there. And I've got some testifiers who could give a brief update on the bill on House File 505.
House File 647. Could you introduce yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Bill Straczynski with Friends of Minnesota Public Television. We did talk about this bill extensively about a week ago in committee, and the idea came up, I think, by Representative Davis, that we should probably do both tracks, funding from general fund as well as legacy funds, and that's what the purpose of this bill is in particular. Mr. Pagliarini can give you just a little insight about what the project was, again, to remind members. But thank you for bringing this bill forward today, Representative.
Thank you, and could you state your name for the record?
Yes. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jim Pagliarini, the president of Twin Cities PBS. I've been here representing all of the Minnesota PBS stations. And as Bill indicated, I want to be very respectful of your time. We did spend a lot of time at the last hearing describing the project, but as a brief reminder, we have what we believe is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity with the premiere of a Ken Burns documentary on Vietnam coming this fall on PBS to really do something to honor Minnesota veterans. And we presented to this committee some detailed ideas of five different ways that we hope to engage Minnesota and Minnesota veterans to really have their stories heard and to be honored. And hearing some of the testimony earlier today, I think it reinforced the appetite in this country to open our doors to Minnesota veterans and give them an opportunity to be honored and recognized for their service to this country. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have really a comment, which is I hope this does become funded through the Legacy Project, because I know when I talk to my constituents, they never know what Legacy is funding. I mean, they know it's out there. They trust that it's funding. But I think this would be a project that really will bring together stories that should be told in Minnesota with this fund that we call the Legacy. And I think it would be high profile enough that people will feel good about where their tax dollars are going knowing that they're going through the Legacy Fund.
Thank you. Any other member questions from members? Anybody in the audience like to testify? Chair Demmer, I want to thank you for bringing this bill on a dual track. I really think it's a great bill, and it's something that we need to get done.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe I'll get it straight the third time. Correct the third time. I renew my motion for House File 647 be re-referred to the Committee on Legacy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
The next item on the agenda is a presentation by the Military Order of the Purple Heart. Presenting for the organizations are Willie Pargo, Commander, Chuck Jones, Adjutant, and Bob Connor, Legislative Chairman.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please introduce yourselves and for the committee, for the record.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, my name is Bob Connor. I'm the legislative chair for the Military Order of the Purple Heart. And with me, I have our commander, Willie Pargo, and our adjutant, Chuck Jones.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I would like to thank you for the opportunity to come before you and present a short introduction to our organization. The order to establish the first Purple Heart was issued by George Washington during the Revolutionary War. The award was revived in 1932 by President Hoover and General Douglas MacArthur. Today, as in the past, the unique bond that unites members of the order is that each of us has sustained a wound or injury inflicted by an enemy in combat. There is no exclusion by war or branch of service. The members' common bond is that they have given of their own blood. Our current membership includes those wounded in World War II, the Korean conflict, Vietnam, Somalia, Desert Storm, Bosnia, Afghanistan, and Iraq. The order exists to serve not only combat wounded, but all veterans and their dependents. All services provided are provided to the veteran at no charge. Our mission as a veteran service organization is to foster an environment of support and goodwill among combat wounded veterans, promote patriotism,
support legislative initiatives, and most importantly, provide service to all veterans and their families. Our organization is grateful for the state funding provided to assist us in carrying out our service to veterans. We are extremely proud of the services provided by the hospital service officers we have located at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center. Each weekday in our office at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center, our members on duty visit patients and assist them in their needs to file claim or other concerns for themselves and their families while they are hospitalized. We make sure that our hospitalized members are visited and also to assist any other veteran that we have the capabilities to serve. And my commander here, Willie, in addition to being our department commander, is the person that schedules the people that work the service at the VA hospital. In addition, we have a national service officer located at the Whipple Building, which is the federal building out in the Fort Snelling area, representing veterans in their application for the federal benefits they are entitled. He has been successful in obtaining substantial monetary benefits for Minnesota veterans. Because of the name of our organization, we get a large number of requests to assist veterans in obtaining the Purple Heart Medal. These requests many times result in the applicant receiving the award. However, the time and effort it takes does not directly impact the state with a monetary benefit increase, which can be immediately measured. However, a veteran that has been awarded the Purple Heart is given a higher priority to receive services from the VA healthcare system. Also, a veteran eligible for this honor should not be deprived of the actual award, and we gladly assist in the process. Our organization has a good working relationship with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. We also actively participate in the Commander's Task Force and the United Veterans Council. We appoint two of our members to seats on the Veterans for Veterans Trust. I have those two members with me. Behind me, I have Bill Cochran of Eden Prairie and Al Fulton of Lake City. Both Bill and Al are Vietnam veterans. In addition, Al was deployed during Desert Storm and retired from the Army Reserve as a sergeant major.
All right.
We look forward to a cooperative effort with the Department of Veterans Affairs and County Veterans Service Officers in transitioning our Minnesota servicemen and women back into civilian life when they return from fulfilling their military duties. We support the Commander's Task Force legislative proposals unanimously. In addition, we are considering legislative proposals exclusive to our organization. One of them is to support state recognition of August 7th as the Purple Heart Day. August 7th, 1782 is the day General George Washington commissioned the Badge of Military Merit, believed to be the first official combat badge of the armed forces. The Purple Heart Medal mirrors the Badge of Military Merit. We also are considering recommending some regulations regarding the fees and parking privileges. I would also like to present to you a PowerPoint at this time about our national foundation, because they are fundraising in the state, and although we do receive money at the state level, our national foundation receives no government funds.
Go ahead, present.
Quickly, I'll go through it. This is the definition of what the Purple Heart Medal is and who is eligible for it. And then the origin of our organization, and who all is eligible to participate with us. We also include our wives, mothers, daughters, and adopted daughters, and the ladies auxiliary. And our mission, as I stated, is to veterans and to patriotic and legislative initiatives.
Okay.
Our service program, we have a service officer. He does an excellent job, is very experienced, and very successful in dealing with all the agencies. Our VAVS program, which is what our volunteers at the hospital do, is to assist veterans. Our American Asthma program works with the schools and educational things to promote freedom and democracy. We have a national scholarship program. Each year, they award to members and dependents scholarships, and the chair of our national scholarship fund happens to be a female veteran. She's a U.S. Air Force JAG officer who was wounded by an EED when she was on duty in Iraq. We have a Purple Heart Trail program, and I want to again thank Senator Limmer, who funded us, and you'll see the rest stop at Maple Grove, where there's a Purple Heart sign indicating the Purple Heart Trail. Interstate 94 is part of the Purple Heart Trail, and at that time the legislation was passed. It included funding by the Department of Transportation, for which we are very grateful. We have an ROTC and junior ROTC recognition program, and there are quite a few colleges and high schools in the state that have an ROTC program, and we recognize and honor them. And the foundation itself was chartered in 1957 to help veterans. Some of the things we've done locally, we bought the shuttle bus for the Minneapolis VA Medical Center that shuttles people from the far parking lots into the hospital, and up at St. Cloud VA Hospital, which if you've ever been up there, it's all spread out on one story over several acres, and we've donated some golf courses to help move veterans around that area for their treatment.
Got about a minute or so.
Okay. All right. I'll quickly go through this. And we have third-party grants, such as what I'm talking about, particularly in areas of TBI, traumatic brain injury research, and for homeless veterans. We hope to take care of veterans. There are 22 veteran suicides each day, and we are hoping to do our part on research and technology for that. And we fill in the gaps, including things like service dogs, which are not funded by the VA, and women's veterans issues. And we receive no government funding, but we do have auto donation programs, including household donation programs, and we solicit cash donations and gifts in kind, and also assist people with estate planning and corporate sponsorships. It's the end of the slideshow. I wanted to expose you to those in case any of your constituents ask about our fundraising program. That concludes it. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from the committee? And committee members, this was my whole push this year, is to bring each organization from the Commander's Task Force in here so that the committee gets a good understanding of exactly what these different organizations do and how they are all brought together by the Commander's Task Force. And also the UVLC, United Veteran Legislative Council, which was scheduled to report here today too, but we'll bring them on next Monday. And with that, we are adjourned.